Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. If you want something fun and easy to search for homes and apartments, then you should be using the Redfin app. Whether I'm searching for my next place, if I want to buy, if I want to rent, or if I just want to scroll through and see some dream homes, like, for example, something on the beach or at least a walk to the beach, a big house, second, maybe a third floor, I use the Redfin app. Redfin makes it fun to search all the homes for sale and apartments for rent in your neighborhood. You can filter for price, for beds, for baths, square footage, and so much more. So if you find a place you love, Redfin makes it easy to go see it in person. Just schedule a tour right from the app. Plus, if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents know how to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they close twice as many deals as other agents. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards your next home. So whether you're looking to buy, you're looking to rent, you're looking to sell, Redfin's got you covered. Download the Redfin app to get started.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Between two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN, you try to be in control of how your info is protected. But many other places also have it, and they might not be as careful. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for 40% off. Terms apply.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
What it is, do not adjust your dial or your volume. This voice is deeper and larger than little Kilmeade. This is Tyrus filling in for Brian Kilmeade today on the Brian Kilmeade Show. And yes, I've adjusted the desk. I've gotten rid of the booster seat. So I am comfortable. I am locked in. And if you hear those giggles already, that's right. I have the amazing one and only Charlie Horton. Hey, and thanks for Charlie coming in. He ran as fast as he could to get here. Appreciate it. I wish we had different things to talk about this morning, because you and I want to know about your farm stuff.
Yeah.
You know, people don't realize that.
I had to do the Kilmeade sprint from downstairs up here and walked in just with like 1 minute to spare. Yeah, it is. And it's a, you know, I was looking forward to talking about all the fun stuff as well. And it's a reminder of, like, you know, obviously, you know, people are rooting for one side or the other in these situations. Yeah. But it's, we're talking about human lives at risk, and it's pretty freaking scary.
Yeah, and for the, like I said, those of us who weren't watching a lot of news or whatever, I mean, obviously the breaking news is that Israel has bombed Iran and has taken out some of their key infrastructure, particularly the nuclear stuff. And I guess my question to you is like, this is a war.
Yeah.
And Iran, via their proxy, committed war on Israel October 7th. And they've had 60 days to try. They were given 60 days to try to work something out. So I don't necessarily see the shock and awe. Israel's not playing around. And I don't understand why there's such a, I can't believe they did this. I mean, they gave them 60 days. I think the president said it best in his tweet. Today is day 61.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it does sort of raise the question about, well, why today? Why not at any point over the past 15 years?
Right.
And, you know, we went through the Obama years where you had President Obama, you had then Secretary of State John Kerry doing everything they could to sort of placate Iran and rebuild, sort of build Iran, give Iran all of this power to shape. And honestly, I've never been able to figure out what exactly the Obama policy was there. But whatever it did is it allowed the leadership of Iran to thrive and survive all this time. And so it does kind of make you wonder, like, why now? And might it have been easier if this had happened 10 or 15 years ago? But here's the thing, going back to your initial point, which is the most important one, which is this is war. You know, everybody seems to be in agreement that Iran is days away from being able to convert their nuclear program into nuclear weapons. And it's been days since inspectors have had any sort of cooperation with them. And supposedly, we understand that they had enough nuclear material to make
it was 10.
10 to 15
You just need one.
Yeah, you just need, exactly. You just need one. And it changes everything.
You know, and again, I feel like I have to keep pressing upon this point. Israel didn't start this war.
Right.
October 7th, they ratchet things up. Now, we have had strong, we didn't have strong leadership in the beginning of this war. We have a strong American presence now in this war. Now, was this the best situation for America, who was in the middle of trying to do a nuclear deal? Probably not, but we're in America. You know, like, our country is divided by a huge ocean. You know, Israel's in it. And if they, if their intelligence, and again, they were planning, they've been observing, what is it, 8 months?
Yeah.
They've been watching what's going on there. They had the intel. They're in proximity. You cannot, this is not a, oops, I wish we should have. You know, if you think they're days away, then you 1,000% take the enemy out. I don't, right. I find it very hard not to be supportive of Israel in this situation, because if this was America and this was Mexico,
right,
there would be no question.
This situation would not even exist.
No,
but you know, I love the way the administration has played this, because they have been at arm's length about this. They have, you know, Marco Rubio last night called this a unilateral action. President Trump said, you know, we're not behind this. Obviously, he knew about it beforehand, and I think that you know, to take this very much an America first approach, where you're looking at this, you realize, and they both have said, President Trump has said, and Marco Rubio said last night, that you know, Israel needs to be able to defend itself.
Yes,
which is true, and but just saying that in and of itself sort of suggests a posture of a kind of a slightly hands-off posture by the United States. And it allows President Trump to stand there on the sidelines and say, hey, if you want peace, Iran,
yes,
if your people want peace, you come to us and we'll figure it out. And then that statement about it's day 61.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
But hey, you know, and this is the thing that, and again, if I could, let me play a sot for you from Netanyahu, because I think this kind of embodies the attitude of Israel.
The Jewish state refuses to be a victim of a nuclear holocaust perpetrated by the Iranian regime. I've made it clear time and again, Israel will never allow those who call for our annihilation to develop the means to achieve that goal. When someone comes to kill you, rise and act first. This is exactly what Israel has done today. We have risen like lions to defend ourselves.
I mean, he's just letting you know we are not playing in this is a real existential threat.
Yeah.
Iran is an existential threat, not just to Israel, to every free democracy country on this planet. But they're dealing with a real existential threat. Yeah. Where in America we had fake existential threats, i.e., oh, it was President Trump. And I think standing on the sideline, but it's different than the previous administration.
Totally.
Because it felt like no support from an outsider looking in. It felt like there was no support, or there was always a questioning of Israel, not a support of like, this isn't our call, but we're here. I think that's the difference with this administration. They're not publicly saying, oh, Israel's bad for doing this. You know, the Biden administration was basically making Israel out to be the bad guy,
right,
in this situation, that the Palestinians were innocent victims in all of this. And I'm glad to see that narrative has changed.
Yeah, and that was kind of the posture we saw throughout the Obama years, was that it was all Israel's fault.
Yes.
And that Israel was the problem. And that's why I'll never be able to wrap my brain around why they wanted to empower Iran. And by the way, after the first Trump term, where Iran, just like Vladimir Putin, didn't have a pot to piss in. I mean, they had nothing.
Nothing.
And then when Biden came in 2020, I bet we've never seen a faster growth in terms of wealth and power for either Vladimir Putin or for the mullahs of Iran than when Joe Biden first came into office. Oil spigots got turned on.
Yes.
The price of oil went through the roof. They suddenly became massively wealthy. And, of course, we saw the terror that they sowed from that. One thing that I think, though, is really important to sort of kind of consider at the moment is that, you know, we have in the United States, we have seen we've been involved in some really screwed up things
yes.
over the decades.
Yes.
And we have seen people, you know, whether it's the war in Iraq or the 20 years in Afghanistan after the most spectacular toppling of the Taliban in the months after 9/11, that was brilliant. And then there reached a point a couple of months after that where we went into like nation building and all this weird stuff.
Right.
And so many of the people who have been jockeying for this war for a long time are the architects of untold disasters
yes.
that we have endured. And our boys have gone and fought and died and been maimed for. And so it's a really troubling spot for those of us, like you and me, and President Trump, by the way, who is very wary of those people and very wary of getting into something where our boys are going to have to basically write checks that we can't cash.
Right.
And so, just like the way you opened the show, I'm scared for us and for the world. But I recognize that, you know, Iran is the number one state sponsor of terrorism around
yes.
the world. They are a threat to civilized people, especially in the Middle East. And obviously they're a threat to our closest ally in the Middle East. And so I understand why people are really uncomfortable right now. And I count myself among them, but
I feel, and I'll push back a little bit. I was physically uncomfortable and afraid during the Biden administration on all world fronts because I felt like we had no backbone and that we took
a backseat.
Even the president, this was not good for what we're trying to do right now. And I'm going to play, can we play the spot where, and I think it's number four here, where Donald Trump at the White House, he talks about he didn't want Israel going in because it could blow the deal. Do we have that?
I want to have an agreement with Iran. We're fairly close to an agreement. We are fairly close to a pretty good agreement. It's got to be better than pretty good, though, but it's got to be, I much prefer an agreement. As long as I think there is an agreement, I don't want them going in because I think I would blow it. Might help it, actually, but it also could blow it.
But that type of leadership is like, I prefer they didn't go in.
The dude gets real politic, unlike anybody else.
He just keeps it real. Like, hey, it might mess the deal up, but or it might help it.
Yeah. Joe Biden came into the presidency as the most experienced geopolitical expert ever
50,
invented
was it,
on
50 years.
Yeah. Nobody had his chops when it came to geopolitics. And he messed up everything he touched.
Thank you for using the appropriate words.
He screwed up everything he touched. And then you get Donald Trump, who has zero geopolitical experience whatsoever.
Unseasoned.
Yeah, walks in and immediately sees every actor for who they are and navigates all of it. And the thing I think is really interesting is that, you know, Joe Biden or Barack Obama or whoever you want to name could, you know, President Trump could do something that was exactly the same as one of them, but it would be different for you and me.
Yes.
And the reason it would be different for you and me is because we've seen Trump. We see how he acts. He's a principled guy, unlike these other people. He's also not a freaking ideologue. He is not like jaundiced by some worldview that all these people get bought into, whether they're paid. I have no idea why they buy into this stuff, but they get bought off by it. So then they're no longer like thinking about the realities of the situation. And Donald Trump is not that guy.
No.
And he's willing to take the facts as they are, the situations as they are, and make very wise decisions. And being able to trust somebody to make those decisions is a total game changer.
And he put out this tweet, and it's on Truth Social. And I love the end. You know, he's like, he said you had 60 days, day 61. Like he's letting you know. But he was like, listen, this is my part. There has already been great death and destruction, but there is still time to stop this slaughter. The next already planned attacks will be even more brutal. So this needs to come to an end. Iran must make a deal before there is nothing left. He's literally doing the pamphlet dropping. Yeah. We're no longer dropping the papers over the country saying
Desert
get out. He's messaging them, but while he's doing it, and this is the brilliance of it, while he's doing it, he's not condemning Israel. He's basically saying he's holding back. It's like a bar. Hey, if I let this guy go, if I let this dog off the leash, It's going to be scorched earth. Please help me help you by telling Israel we got a deal and do not finish the job, because I love that. That to me is still power. Like, hey, I'm trying to help, but I can't call these guys off. So do yourself a favor and get with me.
And the thing is that what's true in a barroom fight is true in the Middle East.
Life is life.
It's like, yeah, human nature is human nature.
Or two guys at a bar, one guy going, hey, you want to do this?
Yeah. And the line about it's day 61 comes after his Truth Socials overnight, where he says, we had nothing to do with this. This was not our thing. We didn't do it. All this kind of stuff. The option, the peace table is still open for you to come to. So he does all that. And then drops the bomb. Oh, by the way, I said you had 60 days. Today is day 61. And it was like, it's like a wink as he walks away.
It's almost like you borrowed money, from the mob, and it's like, all right, you're going to pay me back in 30 days. All right, I'm going to pay you back 31. Hey, it's 15 days away. Don't forget my money.
Day 31.
31. Yeah. That's when you get the golf club to the knees.
Yeah.
Huh? You like that? it's that great Family Guy with Stewie and Brian owed him 50 bucks. And, don't make me do this, man. And before we go to break, I'm going to bring you back because I want to segue, because we're talking about borders, but I also want to talk about how you have built a border on your farm. So
nice.
we will get a chance to talk about a little bit of farming. All right. So we'll be, like I said, you've been listening to the Brian Kilmeade radio show with Tyrus. That's right. That's my name, with the impeccable Charlie Hurt.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. If you want something fun and easy to search for homes and apartments, then you should be using the Redfin app. Whether I'm searching for my next place, if I want to buy, if I want to rent, or if I just want to scroll through and see some dream homes, like, for example, something on the beach, or at least a walk to the beach, a big house, second, maybe a third floor, I use the Redfin app. Redfin makes it fun to search all the homes for sale and apartments for rent in your neighborhood. You can filter for price, for beds, for baths, square footage, and so much more. So if you find a place you love, Redfin makes it easy to go see it in person. Just schedule a tour right from the app. Plus, if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents know how to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they close twice as many deals as other agents. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards your next home. So whether you're looking to buy, you're looking to rent, you're looking to sell, Redfin's got you covered. Download the Redfin app to get started.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He really likes the sound of his name, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Brian Kilmeade Show. Brian Kilmeade Show.
And he likes other people to say it.
Yes, he does. And he just got me to say it because I'm Tyrus filling in for the great Brian Kilmeade. Now, we talked about the important stuff. And now we're going to talk about some more important stuff, because I don't think a lot of people realize how grassroots you are. Mm. You are a man's man, but you're a farmer. And
a fake farmer, but a farmer.
You take care of your animals at a high level. Yep. And you have been telling me stories of your battles with some of the vermin from protecting some of your favorite farm, because you've had peacocks, you have all the animals, some of the fun stuff you have, and you've had a war with snakes lately, and it's amazing. You finally have shored up the border that is your chicken coop?
Yeah, I think we have, and I know that you appreciate this. I kind of have a rule against killing snakes.
Yes, because, I love this.
They're such an important part, especially because I don't really like cats, because cats kill all the birds. And,
right.
It's just whatever. So, but they keep their mice down. They keep the rats down. They're a wonderful part.
They have a purpose.
And you get to know them. If a black snake gets to be 7 feet long, you kind of get to know them, and they know you, and you just kind of, everybody minds their distance. But every now and then you get a little young upstart that comes around that doesn't know the rules. And just this week, in fact, we had about a five and a half foot black snake got into the brooder coop. And, if you just took one bird, one chick, and ate it, but that's not what they do.
No.
They go in there, and they kill five of them. They try to eat one that they can't swallow, and they have to kick it back out, and then they go to – and they don't even eat half of them, but they kill a bunch of them. And I'm like, sorry, buddy. I got to cut your tail off right up behind the ears.
Yep.
And that's what we have to do, and I hate doing it, but – It has forced me to design the perfect brooder coop.
I cannot wait.
Impenetrable.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if we have the special effects for a drum roll, but if we did, let me just add it in there because chicken coop guys everywhere, go.
It's you take the plastic bin from Tractor Supply,
okay,
and drill holes in the top. You put your with your hardware wire cap top with 2x4 around the top, and you have to drill it down into the plastic tub.
Okay.
And then you just take the light and rest the light on top of the wire. So there is no fire, it's not going to overheat.
Right.
And the chicks can get be wherever they want. They get as close to the light as they need or as far away. And I will bet you any amount of money there will never be a snake that gets into this thing.
I will take a $2 bet because I believe you.
There we go.
See, and again, this is why Charlie's such a cool guy, man. He's just not brains. He's bronze. He gets dirt under his fingernails. He's an American man.
There we go.
And it's all about American men today on the Brian Kilmeade Show with special guest man host Tyrus.
Power, politics, and the people behind the headlines. I'm Miranda Devine, New York Post columnist and the host of the brand new podcast, Podforce One. Every week, I'll sit down for candid conversations with Washington's most powerful disruptors, lawmakers, newsmakers, and even the President of the United States.
Hello, everyone. This is your favorite president of all time, Donald Trump, and listen to Miranda Devine on her brand new podcast. It's going to be through the roof.
These are the leaders shaping the future of America and the world. Listen to Podforce One with me, Miranda Devine, every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. You don't want to miss an episode.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
At one point, I had a question. And so I began to ask a question. I was almost immediately forcibly removed from the room. I was forced to the ground. And I was handcuffed. I was not arrested. I was not detained. I will say this, if this is how this administration responds to a senator with a question, if this is how the Department of Homeland Security responds to a senator with a question, you can only imagine what they're doing to farm workers, to cooks, to day laborers out in the Los Angeles community and throughout California and throughout the country. We will hold this administration accountable.
I'm not crying. You're crying. I'm not crying. Yeah, you know what? And it would happen to any of those people that he noticed when they don't identify themselves, don't have the proper credentials, and just barge up in and walk up in to a gnome's meeting. So, yeah, you're going to get her. That's exactly. They did their job at a high level, effective level in this time of protests and attacking somebody. A large man storms into a building, doesn't declare who he is, doesn't have the proper identification, and he got his behind snatched up and arrested. And here's the thing. They didn't take him in. They didn't process him once that it was cleared up. But I find it absolutely hilarious that he is going through this emotional thing that happened to him, but leaving out what he did to cause it. This is 1,000% your fault, good sir. If you're going to go in, it's just like going in a club and you ain't got your ID, you're not going to get in. You keep trying to get in, you're going to get snatched up by security. So I don't have a problem with this at all. But before I bring in our guest, Reagan Tarleton, who's coming on, I want to get another one of the freakouts. If we could listen to 13 Schumer, that to me was absolutely. Again, they always leave out the actual truth of the facts of the matters. Listen to this.
I just saw something that sickened my stomach. The manhandling of a United States senator. We need immediate answers to what the hell went on.
As if made to kneel before the authority of the executive. because he was so-called disrespectful. If you could make Alex Padilla forcibly kneel before this executive, when does it stop?
Let's have an independent investigation. Senator Padilla was trying to do his job, and he was stopped in the middle of that, pushed to the floor, and handcuffed.
Kristi Noem should never have been appointed to that office. She should resign from that office. There ought to be an investigation of the conduct of those officers.
Schiff talking about conduct? There is a lot of hurt feelings. But again, they did a wonderful job of being law enforcement, of being ICE. That's what you're supposed to do when somebody decides to storm into a building unannounced. You don't know the threat. You don't know who or whom they are. And I think sometimes he might have been guilty of a little vanity, thinking everyone was just supposed to know, oh, that's the senator, the good senator's here. So joining me now to talk about this from a legal standpoint is Rachel Charleston, attorney from New Orleans and former reality TV star and mother and businesswoman. Reagan, good morning.
Good morning, Tyrus. How are you?
Oh, I'm phenomenal. I'm living the dream.
There's a lot to talk about.
Yes, there is. And that's why I always ask you to do this, because you usually have the answers that I'm looking for. So from a legal standpoint, does he have any case at all? Can he say that it was roughed or assaulted by law enforcement?
No, I mean, that was the proper reaction, to storm in and barge in without notice or invitation. I mean, let's look at it. This was exactly, as everybody's saying, political theater. It was to create a spectacle, to stir the pot, to heighten tensions. This went according to plan. Padilla achieved exactly what he wanted. He knew when he didn't walk into the room. I mean, he barged into the room, interrupted her press conference, and he got exactly what he wanted. It's a moment. He got in front of news cameras. He is on his soapbox, and it's exactly as planned.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It's planned, but I don't think it's getting the reaction that he thought he would get, because other than the usual suspects, the progressive senators, no one's really talking about it. You know, no one, there's not like a bunch of shows going, this was worse than Watergate. This was everyone kind of feels like, yeah, you probably should have knocked before you came
in. It didn't land well.
No, it
didn't land well. And I think that we've seen, the usual tactics, they're not hitting like they used to. It's, we're in a different political landscape, but I do think that was absolutely the intended goal. But times are changing, and I think people have, they are enlightened. They see what's going on.
I think the adults are back in the room.
I agree.
I feel like he basically tried to do a tantrum like one of your children does. And not, most parents, new parents freak out and be like, oh, I need to calm him down. Experienced parents, you're just going to sit on the floor and cry. I'm not dealing with you. Let me know when you're ready to join the group, and I feel like he was on the ground, he was crying, and the American people were like, yeah, you can sit there and cry, but you shouldn't have been in there first place. Like, better than that. I'm glad that we're starting to see.
There's no decorum, and that's so obvious. And it's just a circus. It was complete chaos. And, law enforcement acted exactly as they should have, and he was removed quickly and swiftly. And that's what they're there for. But yeah, no, it wasn't intended. There was a purpose, the goal for them. I think, maybe in hindsight, it looks like it didn't go perfectly, but they got what they wanted.
Right. I don't think this story survives the weekend news cycle. I think this is already kind of dried up with them, so to speak, unlike the tears that they're all.
It looks so bad.
Yeah. But law enforcement looks strong, direct. And we know that those of us, the people who have signed up to do the work under the Trump administration are being kept safe at a high level. So I think I look at it from that perspective. It's reassuring to know that they're not going to be able to do the disruptive stuff that they've been doing for the last 4 years. America's kind of tired of it. We're seeing the same thing with these riots and these so-called they're non-peaceful protests, to where they're not getting the effects that they got from the George Floyd Black Lives Matters of the summer of 2020. So they're not, and to acknowledge what you had said earlier, that America has kind of been like, our arms are crossed now. We're kind of giving this, you know, the squinty eye while they're doing it. And I think that's good for everybody. And we can focus on actual real things. Because one of the things that you do is you work a lot with dealing with sex trafficking on social media and predatory behavior, and you're constantly in battle with those type of things. I want to talk to you a little bit about an article that came across my desk where it's talking about how much porn has shaped our youth or has hurt our intimacy in relationships. And it's a very shocking thing to see how desensitized we can become by being able to having unlimited access to it. And I think as a lawyer, there are some you know, we talk about freedom. You know, this is a free country and you have, you know, freedom of speech and you can, you know, watch and look at whatever you want to. But do you think there comes a point where we need to put regulations on who has access to porn? Because 50% of the internet, and I read that somewhere, like I don't know if it was 100%, but I think it was 50% of the internet is pornography.
That's not surprising. And I do. I represent survivors of sexual abuse, and we have a very large practice in at my law firm. And we also represent children who have been addicted to social media products. And the sex abuse materials, and it's called child sex abuse materials, that are so prevalent on social media platforms is one thing. But when you talk about the wider World Wide Web, it's truly disgusting. And, you know, much of the porn, it is underage illegal contraband. Right. And there was a case out of Alabama recently, the Pornhub case, and their thumbnails. I mean, they're like on their landing page, they're showing children engaged in sexual acts. And it's, disgusting. You know, the world really has to confront this problem, and you're seeing the judiciary take steps to limit what can be hosted online, and they're, you know, they have blanket shield from liability with Section 230. But finally, I think the judiciary is waking up and trying to catch up to tech. But what pornography has done and how widely spread it is and common and how it's used by predators to groom children – something has to be done with Section 230 to, you know, protect our public from the harms of online.
You know, and speaking of protecting our children, that is one of the biggest things. If you have a groomer in the education system trying to desensitize children to make them more open to different sexual acts that they would never be privy to in their home, or no one would even consider discussing with them. So I think a lot of the laws we've seen in the last 4 years, one of the things in some of the schools where students and teachers, or teachers didn't have to tell parents if a student wanted to change genders or wanted to be called something different. And I never thought that was in line to protect the student. I thought that was in line to protect the groomer. Because what child in any real situation should not be discussing that with their parents? You're trying to say that parents are bad and evil and all these things, and you're putting them in a box and trying to say that like they're every afternoon TV special dad who doesn't get it or care or understand. And that's the farthest thing from the truth. And I find it do you have a similar view in that? Why were those laws put in place? Because they clearly were not for the children.
Well, I mean, I think that parents' rights are certainly intruded upon regularly. That's something you see all the time. But, you know, as for other laws, like in Louisiana, you would have to upload your driver's license to access a porn site. And that was a House bill that was passed, I think, a couple of years ago. And I wish other states would follow suit. Yeah. And I think that's something that could be done to at least kind of tamper some of this, and but certainly,
that's a great point. I know, I believe Florida is doing that as well. And again, if you have to put your ID on it, you're leaving your fingerprint. So I think that's a tremendous idea. And so, hey, we're going to take a quick break. Bring you back after the break because I want to continue this conversation. And or actually, you know what? We have talked so much that we are officially out of time. I love that rookie mistake on my part. I'm sure Kilmeade will be bringing this up for months, but I want to thank you so much. And hey, where can people find you?
At Reagan Charleston on Instagram, or you can find me at awkolaw.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Please tell the family hello for me and keep staying in that fight. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Tyrus.
All right. Well, this is Tyrus filling in for the Brian Kilmeade Show. And we'll be back after a few shakes and songs.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What it is, Tyrus, I'm back in the house. And I have a special guest reoccur. My wife, Ingrid Murdoch, is jumping on with us real quick to talk about all things Tyrus Live and my What It Is tour. Honey, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, I didn't know I was joining you this morning. I thought you were going to be home this morning, but apparently whenever Brian Kilmeade asks you to do something, it's A-OK. You snap to it. When I ask you to do something, like help me advertise these shows, you choose Kilmeade over me. So I guess his show will do to go ahead and tell people where you're going to be over the next couple of months.
Yes. And I just like to also add that Brian Kilmeade is on my wife's approved friend list. So
yes, I actually really do like Brian. He's a good guy.
Okay. Please don't say
but
that.
But you still
ever.
Didn't choose him over me.
Of course not, my love. I would never, ever take my eyes, but not my wife. Okay. Speaking of eyes, I'm getting ready, excited. July 7th is when we kick off our summer tour, and I'll be in Traverse City, Michigan, and then I'll be in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, and Cedar Rapids, Omaha, Nebraska, Concordia, Kansas, Augusta, Kansas, Graham, Texas, Grapevine, Texas, bunch of shows in Grapevine, Texas, Humble, Texas, where my wife keeps me humble, so it's a fun place to be. Gulf Shore, Alabama, which, by the way, thanks to you, it has official Tyrus Day there. Remember that?
It does.
Yes, and I believe I got the key so I can go go-karting at any place I want to there. So, and then, again, we just keep this party going. We're going to be in Niceville, Florida, and Dothan, Alabama, Lakewood, Ohio, and it goes on and on and on. Now, do we have any new cities that you need to announce,
my loving wife? We do. So I have not even put them up for sale yet, but we are going to go to Johnston City, Tennessee. I believe it's October 10th. It's whatever date is open between the two that are already online. And we are adding Marion, North Carolina, October 12th. So those should be up for sale in the next couple of days. We got a lot. We're going back over to like Oregon in November, and then we're already booking for 2026 because you are apparently in high demand, my handsome husband.
Your sarcasm seeps through the microphone.
You are very handsome, especially now that you are kicking butt in the gym.
Oh, yes. Thank you. A lot of people, my wife is my muse, and I've been training hard so I can be able to. We're going to take ballroom dance classes together. We're actually taking our first class this weekend. So I am dusting off my old Funkasaurus dance shoes, and I'm no longer going to just be the dad barking orders from the couch watching the football game. I'm getting in the game. So
I'm looking forward to it because in our personal life, I feel like one of my biggest complaints is I feel like I have to take the lead all the time. So I'm actually really looking forward to you leading me on the dance floor.
Now, listen, I took extensive dance classes in college, not just for eligibility, but for, you know, it was good footwork for football. And the one time we were at a fancy, I reiterate, we were at a fancy dinner and I took you in waltz and you were incredibly impressed. You were shocked, actually. People were standing up and they stopped drinking their drinks.
13 and a half years ago.
Yes, it was. But the point is, at one time I did tickle the dance floor fancy and you had absolutely no problems. I mean, you at one point said, is this the light-skinned version of Fred Astaire? And
so I took the lead. After 13 and a half years since the last time you danced with me and I booked lessons. So now at some point, if you could just wrangle that lead on up and whirl me around the dance floor, that would be amazing.
Listen, my 13-year hiatus, my guilty feet will still have rhythm. Shout out to Wham. so I'm, I'm going to do those exciting things. And of course, not only our dance practice, our wonderful daughter is excelling in the horse jumping world, and you're a full-time horse mom. We got about 45 seconds left. Just can you give us a quick breakdown of what your day in a life is like for you right now? Because you're homeschooling, you're managing the Tyrus Live events, you're keeping me in track, and at the same time, our daughter is extremely demanding sports career.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we just try to do as much togetherness as we can. We've kind of, our new motto in life is like, time and health are the true wealth. So as much of that as we can do together, that makes every day better than the one before. But also, thank you, Brian, for letting us do this on your show, advertise his tour that I booked for him so that I look really good.
Thank you so much, honey. Love you.
Hank's the family fixer, always with his tool belt. But living with prostate cancer, he needed help. He asked his doctor about Xtandi, enzalutamide. Xtandi 40 milligram tablets treats men with prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and responds to a medical or surgical treatment to lower testosterone. Xtandi may cause serious side effects, seizure, a brain condition called PRESS, allergic reactions, heart disease that can lead to death, falls and bone fractures, swallowing problems or choking that can lead to death. Stop Xtandi and get medical help at once if your face, tongue, lip or throat start swelling. Tell your doctor at once if you faint, have a seizure, quickly worsening headache, decreased alertness, confusion, vision problems, chest pain or discomfort, or shortness of breath. Xtandi can cause harm to an unborn baby or miscarriage. Use birth control during and 3 months after Xtandi. Common side effects include muscle and joint pain, feeling unusually tired, hot flashes, constipation, less appetite, diarrhea, high blood pressure, bleeding, falls, fractures, and headache. Talk to your doctor and visit Xtandi.com.
From the Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
What it is Tyrus filling in for the little short stack that is Brian Kilmeade, and we're going to try to keep it positive. But it's been, we've been dealing with the breaking news of what's going on with Israel and Iran. And joining us now is an expert in the field who actually, a little bit of a Nostradamus, too, because he called for this, I believe, in 2012 with an amazing article. Joining me now is Matthew Kronig. He's the vice president and senior director of the Atlantic Council's Scrocoff Center for Strategy and Security. And he's going to be joining us today via Zoom. So I'm pretty excited about that. And we're going to get his thoughts on Israel's strikes on Iran last night. So, Matthew, how are you doing, boss?
Yeah, I'm doing well, and it's a pleasure to be with you. I've enjoyed your work for many years, so an honor to be with you this morning.
Oh, thank you very much. And I know you're not going to do I told you so, but I feel like I told you so. I am in, and I think the majority, that completely understands why Israel is doing what they're doing, given the fact that war was declared on them October 7th, and their existential threat is a real one, in fact. All things seem to be coming from Iran as far as financing Hezbollah and Hamas and stuff. So it was only a matter of time. And then, like I said, Iran had, 60 days to try to figure something out. And President Trump so eloquently put, this is day 61. So as an expert on this, your take would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, well, on the told you so piece, I used to work on the Iran desk at the Pentagon. And when I left, I wrote a piece in Foreign Affairs that got a lot of attention. And I essentially said there are only three ways this crisis is going to turn out over Iran's nuclear program. Either we just give up and let Iran have nuclear weapons, but that would be catastrophic to live with those threats forever. Second, we could get some kind of deal, but I said that's going to be really hard. And I think we saw Obama's deal was too weak. Trump was right to pull out. So I said the only remaining option is the military option. And so I think Israel waited until the very last moment. Iran, according to several officials, was only a week or two away from the point of no return. And so it was a last resort, and Israel took military action to keep them from getting the bomb.
Yeah, and when you hear days away, that could have been hours away. Or they could have, in fact, just were putting the bells and whistles, so to speak. And so you can't really have an issue with what Israel did, given the fact that Iran's been kind of known for pushing the line and trying to buy, and it's 1,000% trying to buy time. The pushback is different from the United States, and it just our response feels different now from the previous administration. I felt like everything that Israel did in the Biden administration was kind of scoffed or was like a half, almost a half-assed. If they were supportive, it was never full support. They're always trying to split the diff, and I think the new administration, no matter whether they disagree or not, you feel the presence of the United States in full support of Israel. Do you see the same thing I'm seeing?
I think that's right. The Biden administration was kind of trying to find a balance in the region. And I think the Trump administration understands that there are pro-American governments in the region like Israel, and there are anti-American governments in the region like in Iran. And we need to choose sides. It makes sense to support your friends and be tough on your enemies.
Now, President Trump earlier, I played a spot where he was discussing this wasn't good for the deal, but then in the middle of him saying it, it could be easier or better for the deal. Do you foresee because of your can you two of your plans happen at once where the military reaction or military force is being used to force them to come to the table?
Well, I think that the military option can strengthen your hand in diplomacy. And Frederick the Great used to say that diplomacy without armaments is like music without instruments. So I do think they go hand in hand. And maybe this new military pressure will coerce the Supreme Leader into finally making a deal. I think that is kind of unlikely, though. He refers to Israel as the little Satan, to the United States as the great Satan. And so I think if he agreed to a deal with the great Satan under this pressure from the little Satan, that he would look weak among his core supporters in Iran, in the military and the clerical establishment. So I think he'll probably continue to resist, even though he is suffering a lot. And this nuclear program that he spent decades and billions of dollars to construct is lying in rubble right now. So he is in a difficult spot, but I think he'll probably continue to resist.
Well, given the fact that their response from Iran with the 100 drones being released, and I think most of them were already knocked out by Israel's air defense system, it feels like they invested so much so into the nuclear side and the funding other people to do their biddings that they don't have the necessary military prowess to really pose an actual threat, like because they keep saying our response will be earth shattering and the world will know, and then it's like seven rockets. You know, I mean, we're calling their bluff, and they do not have the capabilities to, other than the terroristic random things or hoping that one missile gets through or 10 missile, if they shoot 100, that 10 will get through, that they don't necessarily have the military prowess to where, they could really put a stop to Israel if Israel decided to go full scorched earth on them.
That's exactly right. And you've had some journalists today saying, oh, this is going to lead to a wider regional war. But that overlooks the fact that Iran is actually really weak. And, you know, 5 years or so ago, people would say, well, we can't strike Iran's nuclear facilities because if so, they'll ask Hamas to retaliate. But now Hamas has been almost completely decimated by Israel after October 7th. They'd say Hezbollah would retaliate. But now Hezbollah has been almost completely decimated by Israel, including with the really ingenious walkie-talkie and other types of attacks.
Yes.
And they'd say, oh, well, Iran's going to retaliate with massive missile and drone attacks. But then we saw last year when they conducted those attacks against Israel in October and May, Israel's Iron Dome system with American help and technology was able to shoot down almost all the drones. And so Iran's going to try to attack, but as you pointed out, they don't really have a lot of good options.
So they're not going to get their nuclear stuff. They lost a lot of scientists, I believe, or at least that's what the estimate is, and some of their generals. Do you support a regime change, or is it a, and I'm sure they're going to love this, or is it needs to be a come to Jesus moment for Iran, so to speak, in terms of the world that they thought they were in or the position they were in? They grossly overplayed their hand, and they're going to have to deal with some really tough rules going forward.
I think a different government in Iran that respected the human rights of its people, that was cooperative internationally, would be terrific. I just think the United States doesn't have that much ability to control domestic politics in Iran. I think it's unlikely that these strikes alone are going to lead to the fall of regime. You know, the sad reality in Iran for a long time has been that the clerics, the mullahs in power in Iran, are willing to kill their own people to stay in power. And the people haven't been willing to rise up and fight and die in large enough numbers to take power. So I suspect that the regime will hang on. But then one of the key questions is, do they try to rebuild this nuclear program at some point, or do they give up? And the Israelis have said, well, if they rebuild, we can just mow the grass.
Yeah, you know what? Like, and one of the, I was talking to Charlie Hart today from, he was on Fox and Friends, and I get the impression from the White House, the way they're handling things, is almost like, hey, look, I'm trying to help you out. I can't hold this guy off. I got to let this guy off the leash. He's going to lay waste to everything. So before he goes, I'm willing to help you out. But I can only do so much. And they're still supporting Israel's right to defend itself. Again, war. Israel didn't declare war on Iran and Hezbollah and Hamas. They declared on Israel, and Israel is doing what any nation would do. If the United States was dealing, if this was happening, and let's say it was Mexico doing this to the United States, I don't think there'd be any question to bombing their nuclear facilities and those type of things. So do you see our presence, or you see the way the president's handling it strategically from a business aspect of things? I think it's brilliant, honestly. I think he's not splitting the diff. He's saying, hey, I'm trying to help you, but, you know, help me help you, because they're coming for you.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Trump administration has played this pretty well. I think it's unlikely that Israel would have done this without consulting with Washington. So I think we knew this was coming, and we gave them a wink and a nod. But at the same time, Secretary Rubio and others have been very clear that this is an Israeli military action. The United States is not directly involved. And so we'll see how Iran responds. If Iran retaliates directly against Americans, Trump has been very clear that his job as president is to protect Americans anywhere. So if Iran overplays their hand, there's the risk that the United States could get involved. But I think, again, that you're right, that the Trump administration has played this well of supporting Israel without directly involving the United States.
Right. And I think the threat, again, we've been in America, we've been dealing with fake existential threats. You know, President Trump was Hitler and all the propaganda, whereas Israel's been dealing with an actual real existential threat. And if I could play a SOT for you real quick, number two, Major Doran Spellman, who's talking about what prompted the preemptive strikes.
Look, Iran has been saying for years that they're going to be striking Israel with nuclear weapons as soon as they can enrich uranium. They have a countdown clock that literally counts down to Israel's destruction. And we know that they've been trying to enrich fissile material for years. Based on Israeli intelligence reports, we are very close to the point of no return and to the point at which we won't even have intelligence how far their program is sitting unless we hit right now. And on that basis, Israel started this morning the Rising Lion, essentially preemptive attack on Iran to eliminate this nuclear threat. We believe that they mean to carry it out as soon as they have this material.
I mean, you can't get any more direct and honest than that. How do you push Yes. back against that to say Israel shouldn't be defending themselves?
I completely agree. This is an existential threat to Israel. A former Iranian foreign minister called Israel a two-bomb country, meaning one nuclear weapon on Tel Aviv, one nuclear weapon on Jerusalem. There's not much left of the country. And so a nuclear Iran is an existential threat to Israel. But I'd also point out it's a threat to the United States. Yes. Iran is working on intercontinental ballistic missiles. So if we had let this go on, Iran would have the ability to launch nuclear weapons at New York or Washington. And so Israel's really doing the United States a favor here, too, eliminating a threat from one of our biggest rivals.
Well, I also think it's important that now that we, now that America is taking, when a country makes a threat, they're taking it as a threat, not, oh, well, you know, it's because of this or that, you know, all the progressive talk we got from the previous administration. If you are saying, making statements like that, I would take every statement from Iran as a factual, actual threat. And I believe they thought they were they had enough, or they were getting the goal was to make 10 bombs. I think they were within days of being able to make 5 to 10 bombs. And to acknowledge what you said, they only needed two. In all seriousness, they only needed one, because it's not just going to be Israel. It's not like the nuclear fallout and dust and radiation poisoning is just going to stay in Israel. And depending on what wind gets caught up on, eventually we could have that showing up on the shores. It'll definitely be in our oceans, which it could be in our food supply. So, I mean, it is not just Israel that is in danger. It's anything, all surrounding countries. And eventually we could see it, depending on how the currents work. It could be in our own backyard. So I think you have to take the desperation of Iran trying to, because that's their only shot, is a nuclear missile. They cannot compete with Israel militarily at all. Correct? I mean, they just don't have it.
Yeah, that's right. And that's part of the reason that Iran's been investing so much in these kind of asymmetric capabilities, terrorism at the low end and nuclear weapons at the high end, because they don't really have a conventional military. And so this is their asymmetric strategy. And then to your previous point, you know, the Biden administration really focused on avoiding escalation, which essentially meant that the adversaries knew they could get away with a lot and there wouldn't be consequences. And I think what I hope the Trump administration is teaching Iran and others right now is that, no, if you go too far, there will be consequences. And supporting Israel now and really imposing serious cost on Iran for all their threats and all their misbehavior.
And it's good that the adults are back in the room. I guess that's the feeling that I feel when it comes to what's going on in the world today, that America is back to being to watching over and being America, being the world's policeman again. And I think the world's a better place when America is at the top of the food chain. So thank you so much for this time. I really appreciate it. We're going to go into our break. Always informative. It was a real honor to sit down with you. I feel that my opinions are now validated, so now I feel intellectually smart, so now I can go on another show and drop some expertise. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you. And again, this is Tyrus filling in for Brian Kilmeade on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
They can find, you know, any one person that has been killed. And if they've been killed by an immigrant, then God darn it, every single immigrant is going out and they are killers. See, I don't know how many hearings we gonna have about the fact that there's been this one immigrant that killed this one person.
Wow. Just wow. Because I guess one is okay. One is too many. And we don't have just one story. We have hundreds. And we have probably thousands of people who never went forward to law enforcement. Illegal is illegal. If you're jaywalking and you get a ticket, you have to pay that ticket. So this left-wing propaganda progressive argument has no foundation, no legs on it, other than the fact they're just mad it wasn't their success. President Trump ran on his entire campaign was about making this country safe, making America great again, closing our borders. And he's done that. And he's done it in his staff has done it at a high level. Not only is our border secure, both sides, at a record level of people just don't want to cross. They're afraid to cross. And that is good. And the other side of it is fentanyl has been handicapped, has had its legs cut from underneath us, and we're seeing a huge decrease in the murder rate. We're seeing a huge decrease in the fentanyl poisoning, and that is all directly because of what this administration pledged to the American people. And it's not a political issue. This is the thing. Why do you have to be on the wrong side of every 99-1 issue? You should be praising the president for strengthening our borders. You should be praising the president or the administration or the people who actually do our boots on the ground. If you don't want to give Trump his flowers, that this place is a better place for Democrats, liberals, independents, people who don't care about politics, all across America. We are a safer country now, and you should be celebrated for that. And that should not be a Democratic Republican thing, and it's too bad that they don't want to see that because they can't get in front of their own face, so to speak. So keep up the good work, Mr. President, and this administration. This is Tyrus filling in.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
What it is, this is Tyrus filling in for Brian Kilmeade, the Brian Kilmeade Show. Yes, I get 15 cents every time I mention Brian Kilmeade's name, so I'm a little bit over a buck and a half right now. So we're doing big things today, making sure that Brian's little name gets out there. Guys with short statures need big name recognition. So be real, you're getting your recognition today. And we're going to take a different take from the perspective. We've been a lot of talk in this country about immigration, a lot of talk about what we're dealing with, illegal immigrants, and basically the invasion that happened over the last 4 years, where the numbers are in the millions. We don't really know how many dangerous individuals have been in this country, but we do know that countries emptied their prisons and everything else to the floodgates were wide open during this time. And a lot of times we hear from the American citizen perspective, but I also think like one of the biggest voices that we have been hearing in an effort to also share the frustration with illegal immigration is by actual immigrants who did it the right way. And it's more frustrating for all the paperwork and all the time and energy that was spent to get the right to come to this country to pursue your dreams in the America. And America is the greatest place to come chase your dreams. A very special guest today. Also, it's from a little bit of my personal life. So a lot of people are aware of my daughter, Georgie, and her horse jumping success and journey she's gone on. She's only been in the sport a year, and she has accelerated, and she's become a big time jumper, and she's jumping over a meter. And during that time, I met a group of individuals. One of them was our guest today, the great Bruno, and I always mess this, Bruno Dinez Das Neves. Did I get that right, B? Did I get that right? You're affectionately known as Bruno to me. You're from you're a Portuguese jumper, but you also have the American flag, and you've been around the world. You're a world-class jumper. You've won championships. For those of you who have, I'm going to give you, you're going to give them an Instagram, so they, at the end of this, they can check out the voodoo that you do on the horses, and you have been so gracious to take my daughter as your pupil, and still being in the professional ranks. We'll get into that a little bit, but I'd like to talk to you about what you're seeing in this country over the last few years as someone who's come from another country to pursue their dream here in America. Is it frustrating to see how the media spins illegal immigration as it's no big deal, they have a right to be here? Is that fair for someone who did it the right way?
Well, actually not, because to be honest, when I decided to come to America, I did not just decide I want to come here and stay here. So I always had a big fascination about the United States, and I did want to come and check it out. Let's say I wanted to do the sport, mostly because what I do. And yes, there are many steps to take. It's not an easy journey. I'm here, I think, about 9 years now. But it was a process. It took a long time. I had to go through a lot of stages. None of them were easy. I had to prove what I do is what I told United States that I was doing here. And I had to give a lot of proof of that. I had to hire lawyers. I mean, it's been a while, so it's not an easy process, but I still said I'm going to do it the right way because I really don't feel like I should be in a country that is not mine. And if I'm not welcome, number one, and if I don't earn the right to be here. So that was always my main concern.
So you So you had to show, like, hey, yeah, I'm a professional jumper. This is what I do, and this is going to benefit America by me jumping here.
Yes, because you have, first of all, I'm European, yeah, although some of our European countries have different arrangements with the U.S. government. But that gives me at least 2.5 months without a visa to be here, like a holiday. I cannot be working here, obviously. Right. I can come on a holiday. But it takes after that you do if you are staying here, you need to find a sponsor, work. You have to prove that you are able to be taken care of yourself financially. I mean, it's not just come here and stay. Let's just enjoy America.
No one's giving you hotel rooms and food credit cards.
No, nothing. No.
And after you went through all that work, there has to be a tremendous sense of pride that you've earned the right and proven the right that you belong as an American citizen in this country. There has to be a tremendous amount of pride, correct?
No, absolutely. I mean, I love America. I mean, I am Portuguese, but I do have an amount of time in America that makes me feel like I also feel what happens in America. So. But never I think that I am American or I have the rights as an American citizen because I wasn't born here. So I'm just glad I'm a guest and I will try to do the best I can to be welcome.
Because you are very patriotic, except whenever your soccer team is playing.
No, that I'm sorry. I will not change.
No, and it didn't matter. We were having lunch this weekend, my family and you, after my daughter's competition, and it didn't matter what we were talking about. You would just jump in. Oh, score! Oh, we're down. Sorry. It's my but that type of patriotism and support. You grew up obviously with your favorite soccer team, and with the World Cup coming. How excited are you for the World Cup coming?
I'm very excited because I can't wait. We'll try to go watch some games. Finally, also a lot of friends of mine probably will be coming here from Europe. So, yeah, I mean, I hope it's also something for Americans to see the passion of this game. And that could grow in Americans because America has so much talent out there. I am sure they can create an amazing football team. I will say football because
I understand. And the actual host, Brian Kilmeade, he keeps soccer balls in here. Apparently he was a good soccer player in like high school or something, so he's always like held on to it. And I believe he went to college, correct, for soccer? He was a scholarship athlete or a walk-on. We don't have the actual, I think he was a scholar, partial, we'll say Pell Grant. He was a Pell Grant, but I'm just paraphrasing. I'm sure he's watching, having a heart attack, sending text messages in, going, no, I was a scholarship. But with what's going on in Los Angeles, and you had lived in California for a little bit of time.
Yes, I lived a long time, actually, many years.
California has been home to you. And yes, you have seen I grew up in California. And so for both of us, I'm sure you've seen on the news with the riots and the protesting, yep, and stuff. As a person who has the perspective from another country, in Portugal, would that type of behavior even be tolerated?
Well, Portugal is in a different, different dimension. It's also facing real problems, because we also sort of invite illegal immigration into our country. And somehow, although we are only 10 million people in the country, we are very small. So every type of influence that comes, especially that the government cannot control, right, you will be noticed. So, I mean, we are, the whole Europe is having issues with that. And by the way, I'm an immigrant. I have nothing against immigration.
Yes.
I just think that things have to be a little controlled, because it's also not fair for people who go to due process like myself that has to go through all the,
things
we went through. It's very expensive, and for sure, and people would say, well, but you are privileged because you are in some other position. But that's not true, because I came here and everything I had to go through myself. Nobody was paying me anything. I had to work for, even my job was to pay lawyers and money that I could keep for myself, right? So it's not easy for going through the process. For sure, it's easier to go and avoid all that, and then just probably get married or get a green card. And I've done nothing of that. I'm very proud as well. So that would be hard for me to accept. And to be honest, if I was not accepted here and I could not get my paperwork sorted off, I would be okay to go back to Europe. I mean, it is what it is. You know, I'm not going to force myself into a situation that I feel that I don't belong there, you know?
And I think that's the type of immigrant that benefits not just the fact that you represent your country so well, but also you encapsulate what the pursuing the American dream the right way is all about. Now, as when you how you look at what's going on in California, is it depressing to see a place that has so much at one time was such a land of opportunity? You go to California and you can, you know, and with your athleticism as being a world class jumper in the horse world, which is again like soccer, is a huge world sport, and it's something that is starting to get more attention in America and as it's growing. But when you spent a lot of time in California, you performed there, you trained people, horses there to get ready to do your world tours and stuff. Is it disheartening to see the plight in which California has come under?
Absolutely. I mean, when I came to California, I actually lived in LA for a year almost in the beginning. And there was actually a time that things were getting, like, they were constructing a lot of the surrounding areas, like Venice Beach, and they were kind of investing. There was a lot of people moving there. There was some sort of a beautiful energy about it. I was actually working in San Diego, and I was driving back and forth every day. That was actually insane.
You're going to commute in California. I mean, I know that one.
That was insane. But just the fact that I was arriving there, there was some energy that I really liked it, and I actually looked forward to get there in the end of the day. And slowly, I saw LA deteriorating. I mean, I myself lived in San Diego for many years. I think I went to LA probably 3-4 times, and just in and out. I didn't even felt like going there anymore. Although San Diego, it's a sort of a little bubble in Southern California,
yes,
the area where the horses are. I mean, it's beautiful, Del Mar, Encinitas, surfers area. It's a completely different place. But I always thought there was much more mellow and relaxed than Los Angeles or San Francisco.
Right. And it's not that place anymore. Like, I won't even bring my family. Because the Venice, I lived in Miracle Mile, which was, you know, right around the corner from Venice Beach for a long time. But at one time I lived in Palmdale, but I bounced clubs in California. So I used to make that trip on the 14 to the 101 or the 405. And you're seeing and the freeways are being shut down. What when you see this type of protesting where they're impeding on other Americans or other people's ability to do their everyday, go to work or get groceries or whatever, is it just as frustrating? And you see they do it in the name of immigrants and protecting immigration. it's laughable, isn't it? Because if they were really protecting it, they'd be supporting people like yourself who did it the right way. That you should be, you guys should be the one on the cover. Like, this is how you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, everybody has a different situation, a different story. It's hard to sometimes to judge everybody for their situation. Right. I'm sure there are people who are struggling, who have nothing to do with the criminals, and they also taking the hit, let's say. Right. I just think, you know, I believe in democracy. I believe that we all have the right to speak our mind and to say what we think. But I also believe that these things should be done in the way that is peaceful. You know, I don't believe in people creating chaos to let themselves be heard.
Right.
I don't think that leads anywhere. I think it creates a lot of resentment. I don't think it's helping the immigration, the community at all. I just think people will get more defensive. And as an immigrant, I mean, I'm not going to say everything's perfect, obviously. I mean, even in my sport, even when it comes to owners, sponsors, I do have the people will for sure prefer to support an American
right.
Person than myself. So we have to go through all those struggles, and we can say it's unfair, life is unfair. I mean, I chose to be here. If it's so unfair, then I shouldn't be here, right?
Right.
So I believe work is the key. I believe you got to be honest. You got to do your way. And somebody along the process will recognize, and your chance will come. And that's the American dream. I mean, I think if you work hard in America, it's still the only country in the world you can actually work hard and pursue a dream and become something great. When you were just a common person. And I don't think anywhere in the world you can do that. I mean, you can be successful everywhere, obviously.
But you can go from poverty and no yes. name to hosting the Brian Kilmeade show, being a horse dad, having an international sensation train your daughter with you guys at Bay Winds, and, of course, your partner in crime, the great Gabriel Machado. But I want to thank you so much. Your eloquent words, and you just encapsulated what the American dream is like. So best of luck, of course, going forward. I know you're getting ready
thank
for
you,
some
Thomas.
Ocala, and you're getting my daughter prepared. So thank you so much.
Absolutely.
For your time.
Thank you so much.
Yep. And this is Tyrus filling in for the great Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Here you have this senator, Alex Padilla. Can Kristi Noem speak? Could you have waited till she finished to ask your questions? To shout your questions? You are a senator, right? You couldn't wait? So that was just you out of control because you were just losing it, huh? You, a United States senator, couldn't compose yourself and let the head of Homeland Security finish her thoughts before you ask the question. Couldn't do that, huh?
That was Stephen A. Smith losing composure, talking about Senator needs to keep his composure. But Stephen A. was not egregiously off base, as he has made that word famous. He doesn't use egregiously anymore. I wish he'd bring that back. He's like, this is egregious. And I think the fact that he's able to rebound and get himself together since the obliteration of the New York Knicks at the hands of the Pacers when they had home court advantage. I know he's still feeling a certain kind of way about that. I don't even think he's wearing ties anymore because his neck's tight. But I stand with Stephen A. on his accurate depiction of what was nothing more than just a showboat for attention. So, yes, Stephen A., anytime, any place you ever want to come on the Kilmeade Show when Tyrus hosts, and I'd love to chew the fat with you, so to speak. But you are correct. It was an embarrassing moment, and he should be embarrassed just like you and your New York Knicks. This is Tyrus filling in for the Brian Kilmeade Show.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
What it is. I sew a little division, though. I open a little stitch or a little scotch of division every now and then, because otherwise I wouldn't be the king of common sense, Tyrus, filling in from Brian Kilmeade today. And And again, the top of the news, I think we're all paying attention to what's going on right now in Israel, dealing with Iran, and also at the same time what's going on in a lot of our sanctuary cities, particularly what's going on in California. And we're going to get some unique perspective on this. I'm very excited to be having joining me right now Carol Markowitz, New York Post columnist and co-author of Stolen Youth, How Radicals Are Erasing Innocence and Indoctrinating a Generation. First of all, good morning. Is it still good morning? Yeah, technically it is good morning. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Cyrus. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yes. I'm excited. I can't wait to get your perspective on this. I love when you just reading in just the opening sentence about your book, How Radicals Are Erasing Innocence and Indoctrinating a Generation. That was, I think, a concentrated effort over the last 4 years, or maybe even it started a little bit sooner than that, probably towards the middle of Trump's first presidency. I think that's when the woke growth started. And what led you to, because again, you're taking the risk by being one of the first people to, like, it's fashionable now for everyone to stand up and say, the anti, you know, but being one of the people who are on the front line and probably had to deal with a lot of not just social blowback, probably financial blowback, professional blowback. What gave you the courage to be able to, hey, I'm making a stand on this?
Well, I have three kids. We were living in super left part of Brooklyn at the time where this all started to come to a head. I grew up in Brooklyn. I understood it was a left-leaning borough city. But what I saw kind of developing in the time of the pandemic and shortly before that was something else entirely. It was like, yeah, they were liberal, but suddenly it was like you could not disagree on anything. You could not take any stands that were outside of the leftist line. And I saw that they were pressuring each other more than anybody else. I mean, I was always an open conservative. I was born in the Soviet Union. I like to say you don't escape the Soviet Union, get to America and become a liberal. Just generally doesn't happen that way. So there was very little they could do to pressure me, although they certainly tried. But each other, they kept each other in line in a way that was very reminiscent to me of totalitarian societies. And so the opening chapter of our book is about the history of this kind of thing, how totalitarianism spreads, how it's very often not the government enforcing things, it's your neighbor. We needed to have that be the kind of introduction so that people understood what the risks were to our country.
So they kind of, I always say they use virtue signaling as a cover for what they're really trying to do. They create these moments of superiority, like, oh, you know, I donate to, you know, the United Negro College Fund, so I'm an expert on what's going on in black neighborhoods. And the virtue signaling, because again, and the blowback, acknowledging what you said earlier, is that if you disagreed with them, like for a perfect example, I'm African American and I would make a conservative stance, and the liberal would be the one to call me racist names for not agreeing with them, you know.
Amazing.
And I won't go through the epitaph of words that I've been called, never in person,
right,
but they, the list of names that they would be calling me for just disagreeing on a policy, not even a big thing, you know, and,
right.
That seems to be the pretend, seems to be the magic word with them. They pretend that they're about feelings and equity, and but it's no, it's my way or there's no way.
And exactly. I faced the same kind of thing being an immigrant, because as an immigrant, you're supposed to have certain beliefs. Like, I have a column in today's New York Post about how I don't consider that I have anything in common with the people who came here illegally. It was very tough for my family to come. We followed all the laws. We followed laws even when they hurt. Like, my mom couldn't have her sister visit for years and years and years just because she couldn't get a tourist visa. And so we never thought, like, oh, let's just break the law and bring her here anyway. And so when people hear I'm an immigrant, they assume that I'm supposed to have the beliefs that they share, and I just don't have those.
And you know what? You are not alone with that. Earlier, I had a guest come on who also was dealing with, as an immigrant who did it the right way. There is a frustration with actual people who did it, because the steps are extremely difficult and hard, and you have to, it costs money, in some cases lawyers, or you have to wait years, but you do it the right way. And then when you get here, it's a sense of pride because you did everything, you belong, you are part of, because not only did you prove you're valuable to be a part of the American society, like, oh, they're bringing something to this, you also sacrificed to get here. And I think that is lost. And
another thing that's lost is that for every kind of sob story that we hear about somebody who is here illegally being removed, people need to understand that there's, you know, 5, 10, 15 people who would love to take their place and to be here legally and to follow all the rules. And they also have a sad story. They're also trying to escape something. They're also trying to come here and live the American dream. So it's kind of, you know, unfair that these people have gotten to cut in front of the people who are doing it the right way
and take resources. And it is a crime. You know, and that's the thing. It is against the law. And I heard one senator argue like, well, it's a misdemeanor. And it's like, no, it doesn't matter. So is jaywalking. If you don't pay the ticket, you lose your driver's license. So, I mean, it's still, it's connective. And I thought you had a particularly strong post on X, and it kind of falls into this. You said, and I quote, people who pretend to be foreign policy experts on Twitter seem to believe Israel hit Iran without the Trump administration's okay. Stop listening to those people. They have no idea what's going on. And I guess it's a little different than when we're talking about immigration, but that very straightforward way of plain speaking and common sense.
Thank you.
You get so much blowback for the just stating the obvious, correct?
Right. Well, I posted that when it wasn't, like, the news hadn't broken yet that the Trump administration clearly knew what Israel was going to do. But it was so obvious. Trump had been telegraphing it for days. I mean, Donald Trump is a lot of things. He is not somebody that I think keeps secrets. I think he's very transparent. And he, what you see is what you get. And sometimes, you know, for better or worse. But in this case, it was like he kept saying, Iran has to stop developing its nuclear program or something may happen. And it was like so obvious.
Yeah,
so,
you had 60. He said you had 60 days. Today is day 61.
I mean, it's amazing that all of these people who pretend to be experts online, you know, the initial kind of thoughts were, oh, Israel has betrayed Donald Trump, like as if Donald Trump wasn't completely in on what happened. You could oppose military action, especially you could oppose America's involvement. I oppose America's involvement. I don't want American boots on the ground in the Middle East. I don't want any of that. But to oppose Israel doing what it has to do to protect themselves, I think makes no sense. You have to understand that they're a sovereign nation. They have their own concerns and goals. And the fact that they're our ally is excellent, but it doesn't mean that we should always have the same exact goals. So,
and I think we're kind of seeing that. But again, Israel's dealing, one, they didn't ask for this war. This war was brought upon them October 7th. So let's try to remember that when we're crying. And the other thing is that they are dealing with a real existential threat.
Yeah.
The intelligence just showed that Iran was weeks, possibly days, or maybe within the ability to have what we think anywhere from 5 to 10 functioning nuclear weapons. And they have been quoted on many occasions over the years saying they only needed 2, you know. So I don't understand any blowback. Did it help America? No, because we're in the middle of trying to negotiate a deal and the president made mention of that. It doesn't help the deal, but then again, maybe it could help the deal. I just feel like
it might be an easier deal now.
Yeah, it should be, you know. And I think taking those stances on that, and again, you also had an article coming out where you talk about, I'm a legal immigrant and don't you dare lump me into border jumpers. And I think that's we have to echo that point because your voices are the ones that we need to hear. And it seems like the media has done a really good job of never getting the actual, going to the actual source. Well, let's see what people who went through their steps the appropriate way, what they have to say to this. And it's overwhelming. I would say 99%. They're like, no, You need to do it the right way. This is my country. I earn the right to be here. You don't get just to walk in the back door and say, hey, we get the same rights. Or in some cases, you weren't getting people giving you meal cards and flying you and putting you up in hotels for a month.
No, we were not.
Not even close.
No. We had to have somebody say that they were going to sponsor us. We couldn't arrive here and get on welfare, for example. You were not allowed to accept any public funds, actually. And the person who said that they would sponsor you was responsible for you. So if you couldn't get a job for whatever reason, maybe you chose not to learn English or whatever, that person had to support you. And so there used to be a system. That's what I also think people forget, that it wasn't always like this. It wasn't like this chaotic thing that the Democrats have largely created. There used to be a system. I was a refugee. It was a faster process for refugees who were in danger. And so this used to have a way that we used to do things, and it made sense. What we're doing now, what we've been doing for the last, you know, 5, 10 plus years, makes no sense. And it makes no sense for Americans more than anyone. Why are we paying for people to come here, break our laws, and we fund them for that? How does that make any sense? And the idea that we're not being compassionate, I don't think it's compassionate to say anybody from anywhere in the world can just break our laws and jump our immigration line and come in. That's not compassion to me. And the risks that we're taking are huge on that. And it makes no sense. And I really would love for us to go back to what it was, you know, 40 years ago and make it make sense again.
You know, because there's a lot of the left, the extreme left is, of course, making ICE a target for enforcing the laws that they did not enforce for 4 years.
Yeah.
And I would say it's in the millions of undocumented, especially middle-aged or in-shape military-age men that have just strolled into this country over the last 4 years. I want to play a quick shot for you. Can we play 21 and 22?
When you compare the old films of the Gestapo grabbing people off the streets of Poland, and you compare them to those nondescript thugs who grabbed that student, that graduate student, it does look like a Gestapo operation. It does look like the Gestapo. You know, my dad served in Second World War. He fought the Nazis in Northern Africa. He fought the Nazis on the Italian peninsula. And I think he's looking down right now and he's happy that I'm fighting today's Nazis.
If we just roll this clock on the wall back 75 years, we'd be looking at a time in Nazi Germany where people ran around with signs like this new ICE sign that says, report all foreign invaders to ICE, with Uncle Sam there holding up the sign. This could have been a Gestapo member 75 years ago, report all Jews. 100 years before that, it could be a plantation owner that said, report all Negroes and all coloreds and all those who are from Africa because they are disrupting our country. So let's not get it twisted here.
I would say he 1,000% has it twisted. First of all, how dare you?
Yeah.
How dare anyone compare
any
situation to what happened with Hitler, what happened with the Gestapo, what happened to Israel, what happened to Jewish people in World War II. The fact that you would even try to compare it, one, shows that, one, you have no class and no real understanding of history. Maybe you need to refresh yourself. But when you hear that type of talk as an immigrant, as somebody who comes from a country that has had issues similar to what has happened in Germany back in the 40s, how important is it to push back on this type of language?
It's just disgusting. The idea that the Gestapo was rounding up Jews and what, sending them back to where their homeland was? That's actually the whole problem, right? The people who believe that Jews didn't have a homeland and shouldn't have a homeland now also thought that they shouldn't be allowed to go to what was then British Mandate of Palestine. Jews would have loved to be sent back there. That's the whole thing. It's like they weren't rounded up and sent back to their homes. They were rounded up and murdered.
Yeah,
and that's
attempted to be extreme genocide, real genocide.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a little bit of a difference between being able to go back to the country where you're from, where a lot of the people say that they feel the affinity for anyway. When we're watching these protests and riots in Los Angeles. They're waving Mexican flags. I can tell you, I have never waved the flag of the Soviet Union or Russia or Ukraine or anything ever in my life, especially while rioting in the streets. I came here to be American. That's what legal immigrants do. We want to just come here and be American. We don't want to hold on to something else. We don't want to be anything else. And that's really a major difference that I'm seeing.
Yeah, we're seeing a simulation versus just chaos.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Riveting.
Best of luck with your book. I'm going to pick it up myself, get some good reading in. And again, thank you for your patriotism. And I think you're a strong voice for what American citizens who immigrated from other countries that came in the right way. So do not stifle your voice. And at least now you're starting to see that you're not the only person standing in the middle of the room going, hey, this ain't right. So now it's starting to be echoed and we're seeing a real change. And I, for one, am thankful for that. So thank you so much for your time today. And thank you. And again, this is Tyrus filling in for the, should we say, structurally challenged Brian Kilmeade on the amazing Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Do it peacefully. It's a vulgar display. It's the kind of thing you see Kim Jong-un, you see it Putin, you see it with dictators around the world that are weak and just want to demonstrate strength. Weakness masquerading as strength. To fet the dear leader on his birthday, what an embarrassment. Honestly, that's about as small as it gets. How weak do you have to be to commandeer the military to fet you on your birthday in a vulgar display of weakness? That's Donald Trump.
No, I beg to differ, good sir, governor, and I can do that without the massive hand signals. You are an embarrassment. You have been an embarrassment. The fact that you even think that you could lead this nation is embarrassing given what you have accomplished or destroyed in the state of California, which was my home, which I grew up in. It used to be a place where you could do everything in one day. You go to the beach, you can go to the snow, you can go to the desert, you can go to the party. You have ruined all of that, sir. The fires, we don't know new houses, the drought, the misparation of funds. You created a homeless civilization. You've ruined California, sir. You are the embarrassment. And that's Keeping It Real with Tyrus, filling in for Brian Kilmeade on The Kilmeade Show.
A talk show that's real. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
You know, his mental decline was obvious. You never discussed that with Vice President Harris?
No, not that I can recall, Chairman. And I, as governor and then being on the ticket, I was probably more concerned with my own debate performance than President Biden. So, no.
Wow. You know, Tim Walz is the annoying gift that keeps showing up. I think he's replacing fruitcake as the official worst gift that is Tim Walz. And we've had a colorful background. He at one point had said that he wanted to punch a Trump supporter or a MAGA guy in the mouth, or he wanted to beat him up. And I had, within seconds, jumped on Twitter and I said, I am your Huckleberry. And to be clear, it's Huckleberry, not Huckleberry. Anyone who actually knows the movie Huckleberry is the one who carries the casket. So that's what the great late Doc Holliday had said, I'm your Huckleberry. And I had sent out a tweet saying, hey, I'm in, let's do it for charity. And meanwhile, while that was going on, apparently great minds think alike. The one and only amazing, I call him Mr. Mayor, Glenn Jacobs, a.k.a. Kane, Hall of Fame WWE superstar, he also jumped in. And so between the two of us, we're in a tug of war for a one-on-one with Tim Walz that was never responded. But given the answers that he just gave, joining me now is the amazing Mr. Mayor, Gutfeld regular now. He's got some pithy and funny remarks, so he's just a man of wears a lot of hats. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Mayor. And what are we going to do about Tim Walz? He just keeps saying stuff that just really makes you want to just beat him up. You didn't know? It didn't come up?
I have no idea what to do with Tim Walz. I guess it's the old saying, you just can't fix stupid. And unfortunately, he keeps on digging himself in deeper and deeper and deeper. You'd think at some point, you know, you'd just quit digging, right?
But right, yeah.
There you have it. So I feel bad for the people of Minnesota, really. You know, you think about it, that this is their governor. And I don't think I'd be very happy if he was mine.
You know, but at some point he had to have something to stand on or stand for to run. I mean, to become a governor, you have to have some form of platform, and even if you don't necessarily agree with the platform. But whenever he is taken to task, and I want to play another one for you real quick, when him and Nancy Mace got into it, he just, it's not the fact that it's disagreeable what he says. He never has a decent response or an understandable answer, so you really can't feel where he's coming from. Can we play number 31, please?
What is a woman?
What is a woman is the question.
I'm not sure I understand the question here.
Well, that. Okay.
What do you want me to say? This is.
I want you to say that a woman like me is an adult human female, that men can't become women. You guys are the party of violence, and you're the party erasing women. You don't respect us. You're a bigot. You're a misogynist. You're a sexist.
I guess she gave. There's the, what you would call the what for. But it goes back to the answer. At this point in the game, he doesn't have a plan to answer that question?
Well, you'd think. But, again, you know, the guy is just, he's all style with no substance. The
right.
Style's bad.
Yes.
But, you know, like he'll talk about Donald Trump and how Democrats – like he, and I, I have some Democrat friends, they're fine people. I hate actually always saying Democrat.
Yeah, I do too. I always say extreme progressive.
Yeah, like Tim Walz actually represent. But, you know, the folks like him, you know, that they have to be tougher. Well, or have to act tougher. Well, there's a difference between being tough and acting tough. And people see right through that. And that's the issue, is you can act tough all day long, but if you're not really a tough person, if you're not a strong person, and that's where I would say is the big issue, is not a strong person either, and not certainly not a strong-minded person, people are going to see right through that. And that's what makes all of this so laughable. Look, if Mike Tyson says he's going to punch you in the face, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? But when Tim Walz says it, it's just laughable. And that's the thing. And all he's doing is it's always with whatever the outrage of the month is or whatever the virtue signaling of the day is. And there's nothing to stand on. Again, there's no substance. Look, I don't agree with a lot of this stuff that the left or Democrats might come up with. At the same time, some of them really believe that stuff. Okay, I respect that, right? Don't agree with it, respect that. But when you're just saying things to just say them, I have no respect for that at all.
And I think
you just change your mind all the time just to say what's the popular thing among your base. I have no respect for that.
Well, and that's where the thing where he talks about, you know, strength. When he talks about being strong, they're missing the point. Strength comes from a strong belief system. You believe in what you're saying or what you're or how you're living a life so much so you're willing to fight for it. So you can articulate your point because your strength is coming from within or a strong belief system, and acknowledging what you just said is just whatever the 80-20 issue is, they're just take the 20. And in some cases, like we're seeing with and we're both fathers and we've both been very outspoken that we don't want to see boys in women's sports. And we've seen the change in society where now Americans across the board are now saying, yeah, we all agree. It's even a dead issue at this point. But you just don't see from the likes of Tim Walz and them to even acknowledge what is going on in this country without making it political. Like, I think what we've seen with the border is another example where our border is safer than it has ever been. We've seen fentanyl deaths and the murder rate drop significantly as a result of the border being crushed. And yet they're still saying that President Trump is an existential threat. Like, I just, it's frustrating because they just have no belief system other than just whatever Trump does, we're the opposite of.
Right. And weak-minded people and weak people I think, have a lust for power. They want to dominate other people because, and they do so politically because they know that they can't personally do that. They can't do that through any other means. And you see that with a lot of folks on the left. You can just tell that they're very, very weak people. As you said, their character's weak. They're weak-minded. And the way that they compensate for that is by basically using political force. And you see that all through. I mean, just all these people on the far left, they don't believe this. They cannot believe that. All right.
Right. You can't. Yeah.
I said that you can't fix stupid. I don't think Tim Walz is actually a stupid guy. Don't get into that position by being stupid. You can't believe some of the things you're saying, though, if you're a relatively intelligent person. So it is all about the politics. And I think that at the end of the day, it's that lust for domination. It's that lust to show that you're strong and you can dominate other people. And the only way you can do it is through the force of government, is not the kind of people you want in government, by the way.
No, not at all. And again, you're like I said, you have been mayor and you've done an extremely successful job in Knoxville, and you've done some great things. When you see as a mayor, if you put your mayor hat on for a second, which I'm sure it's probably always on, but when you see what's going on in California with the protests and stuff like that, in your cities, and you're not seeing it as much, but there has been a call for this weekend, and pretty much there was a blue spot in every map where there's supposed to be protests for Palestine and blaming Trump for, you know, everything under the sun that they disagree with, even though America currently is thriving, and we got prices are down, inflation's down, jobs are up, like across the board, America is thriving. But you're seeing this concentrated effort to really push this these protests and stuff. Are you seeing anything like that in your community right now?
We're not. OK, let me differentiate between protests and riots.
Yes.
OK. You know, people have a constitutional right to protest, and I fully agree with that. If you see something you don't agree with and you peacefully want to make your voice known, that's a very American thing to do. Burning things down, hurting people, impeding travel and traffic, all of those things are criminal.
Right.
And they should be treated as such. So there's a big difference. Yeah, we have people that want to protest. Okay, fine. You know, you can protest to your heart's delight. But once you start doing the things that we see in other places, our sheriff's not going to tolerate it. Our police chief here is not going to tolerate it. I remember talking with our police chief, who by the way, he's not under me. He's under the city of Knoxville. It's kind of interesting because a lot of folks consider the city very, you know, pretty left, especially compared to the county. But they don't tolerate stuff like this. And I remember him telling me we had a situation, you know, here we had some people are going to cause trouble. He's like, yeah, they can show up. He's like, and that's fine. But if they break something, they're going to jail. And that's how it should be. And that's where California and these other places, you know, they're so afraid to enforce the law. And we have to protect these people's rights. You don't have the right to do that, to riot like they do. Meanwhile, you're not protecting the private property rights and the rights of other people just to live a peaceful life.
Exactly.
Right? And again, it comes down to that fear of, oh my gosh, I don't want to offend these people. What about these people over here with the vast majority of folks?
Yeah, and to, what drives me absolutely insane is when they say things like mostly peaceful protests. No such thing. One, your protest becomes a riot the moment one of you throws a brick at a car. And it was one bad apple. Nope, it's no longer a protest. Once violence starts, spitting on law enforcement, impeding, stop. There was one where a guy was like just braggadocious about not letting a woman get to work. Type of things, there's no place for that garbage. And whatever your message is, that I don't think any of us should care once you start impeding on the rights of other Americans.
Yeah, once you start doing that, I tune out. I'm like, I've seen that throughout my time as mayor, you know, just some of the things I've been involved with. And I'm with a group over here, right? And we're doing something. And then you have these people over here protesting, and not necessarily rioting or anything like that, but just protesting. But the way they conduct themselves, I'm like, even if I agreed with those folks over there, there's no way I would ever be seen with them. Because they're a very bad representation of humanity, frankly, you know, and it's the same here. And also, I don't think these people actually care about any of this stuff. I don't think they care about illegal immigrants. I don't think they care about the LGBT folks. I don't think they care. What they care about is destroying America. And what they care about is, hey, look at me. I'm making a difference. I'm an activist. Well, you're actually just a useless person out there causing trouble for the rest of us. And you're not accomplishing anything by doing that. In fact, you're being very destructive.
As a matter of fact, you think that's why they never interview the protesters? Is that why they, because as soon as they open their mouths, you're like, there's nothing to it?
Yeah, that's why. If you listen to a lot of these people, it's no substance. They're just there just to cause trouble. They're not actually there because they care about this issue. There are some who do, obviously.
Right.
But the people that I think that really cause the problems, the people that riot, the people that hurt folks, the people that destroy property, I don't think they care about the issue. I think that they're just there. I'll give you an example. When they had all this stuff was going on with George Floyd situation, we had some protests here in Knoxville. But our protests were very, very peaceful. Everything was fine. Those folks went home. At night, they had some windows broken. And again, KPD immediately came in and arrested the people that did this. But it was pretty fascinating because the people who went out and broke the windows and were vandalizing things were young white kids.
Yep.
Right? they were just there to take advantage of a situation and to cause trouble. And it's unfortunate because in this country, you know, what protesting really means is bringing things to light, showing that what you think about those so we can actually have a dialogue about it, not destroying the whole thing.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's I don't care. I don't give a rat's ass, pardon my language, what someone who is looting and rioting and destroying businesses has to think about what's going on in Palestine. I think the bigger conversation is you're a criminal who's using this as an opportunity to commit crimes under the veil or the protection of the progressive left. And if it's a progressive left-leaning city, they're going to tell the police not to engage, and you know they're going to basically handcuff law enforcement from doing their job and giving these individuals free rein, and it just spreads. So you have undesirables coming from all over the country, and they're just like, "Hey, where's my sign?" They're not actually there to push this stuff. And the irony thing is not, and it is, it's white, it's young white men, and it's a lot of confused young women. Again, predominantly white. And when I see a white person who's there, I'm standing for the rights of minorities, but won't let a black woman, a mother of three, get to work. There is a word called oxymoron. I'm being polite because we're on air and I will not use that type of language in the good mayor's presence, but it's laughable. It makes you, again, I no longer have the flowing mane of hair I used to have, but it definitely has me scratching my head we try to catch the angle from where everyone else is coming from. So maybe we can find one common link to where we can have dialogue or even understanding. And it's very difficult to find anything in what we're seeing with these so-called protesters. Rioters, I think, is a better use of the term.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I would love to be able to say, you know, you got a point about this and let's talk. But I can't do that because their starting point is, you know, really they're a bunch of communists that want to tear down the capitalist system. All right, let's cut to the chase. And they'll use whatever. They may not know that, actually, but the people who are organizing this, that's what they are. They want to destroy our country, and they hate our free market system. And they want to be the people in charge, right?
Right.
When that's the starting point, sorry, I can't talk to you about this.
And nor should we.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
Well, it is always a pleasure. And I know you are an extremely busy man, but I appreciate you taking time out to join us today. And, of course, we'll be looking forward to you real soon on the Greg Gutfeld Show. You've really become a force on there. You've had some pretty good one-liners. You got a pretty good streak going. You're making me have to earn my paycheck when you come on there.
Well, man, as long as the view's on the air, I've got material.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Hey, man, you have a wonderful – happy Father's Day, by the way. And
thank you.
You have a wonderful weekend, and I know you'll be doing stuff with your family and stuff with your community to commemorate Father's Day. So, again, thank you so much for your time, Mr. Mayor Glenn Jacobs. And this is Tyrus, who's filling in for the gravitationally pulled challenged Brian Kilmeade.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
On Saturday, we're coming together to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States Army with a grand parade, a military parade that I don't think we've ever seen the likes of what you're going to see. I hope the weather's okay, but actually, if it's not, that brings you good luck. And that's okay, too. It doesn't matter. It doesn't affect the tanks at all. It doesn't affect the soldiers. They're used to it. They're tough.
You're not going to rain on his parade. And his parade has been rained on enough. If there was ever a person that deserves to have his birthday celebrated, it is the president of the United States, Donald Trump, and at the same time coinciding with a military parade, showing the world that America is back, that America is fit, that America's pursuit of the American way is worldwide, is an amazing idea. The president has dealt with fake Russian attack, fake attacks from the propaganda media, attacking his family, and two assassination attempts. Piece of his ear will forever be gone. If there was ever a person who should be able to deserve to have a damn parade in his honor, it should be President Trump. And you know what? If I wasn't busy this weekend with my family, I'd be marching in that parade too, giving him a salute. Thank you, Mr. President, for what you're doing, and enjoy your parade. Rain, sleet, or snow, America's ready to go.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.